Let me bring in Brett Dahlberg, WXXI health reporter, who's been covering some local issues and a conversation about masks today. Hi, Brett.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for having me.
All right. So what's going on today?
All right. So our local hospital systems, both University of Rochester Medical Center and Rochester Regional Health, are adopting what they're calling a universal masking policy, which means that everybody in the hospitals, all providers, staff, visitors, it also includes vendors, they told me today, are required to wear masks. These are not, in general, they're not the N95 masks that are reserved for being around patients who are either highly suspected of having COVID-19 or are undergoing things, procedures that sort of aerosolize small particles that could be carrying the virus. N95 masks are going to remain being used just for those procedures or situations. But the masks that everyone in the hospital will be wearing are the sort of surgical or procedural masks. They're the more papery ones that just kind of cover the nose and the mouth but don't create a perfect seal. The aim is to prevent transmission of the virus in hospital settings where as much as people try to stay physically distant from each other, it's not always easy to do that. And many of the people who are at the hospital are going to be sick. And so it's a place that is ripe for transmission, the hospital system said, if people aren't wearing masks consistently.
What do you expect in 2 to 4 weeks' time when we assumedly, Brett, will have more supplies from various sources? What do you suspect hospitals are going to want and need, and what do you suspect the public, the advice to the public is going to be? And suspect is sort of not a smart word here. I mean, I know your job is to report what we know and don't know, but where are we seeing things start to move when it comes to masks and supply chains?
So you're right that suspect is a difficult term to work with here. It's just really hard to make predictions on this. I was talking yesterday to a couple people who are familiar with the models that are being used locally, and changing small things in the inputs for sort of short-term situations, like how much are we social distancing? Is it a whole lot or just a medium amount? Making those small changes at the beginning results in really big shifts in when the peak of the curve happens and what the peak of the curve looks like. So it's really hard to look ahead. But what we can say for now is that the people who are making those models are pretty well convinced that we are not anywhere near the peak yet. But what we're looking at in terms of hospitals being able to get the supplies they need on personal protective equipment in particular, so things like masks and gloves, they're saying that they are, depending on the shape of the curve, they're saying that they are pretty well stocked for right now with supplies ranging from several days into a few weeks. And their usual supply chains are still intact. So they are still able to go to their regular suppliers and get those things. But they are also accepting donations from the public. If it's handmade masks, they're not using those on, you know, the hospital floor as yet, but they are collecting them and making sort of a stockpile in anticipation of potentially a disrupted supply chain. What it's all going to look like at the peak is just really hard to say right now, though.
Okay, and by the way, when you say they again, if there are listeners who are thinking, hey, I've got a bunch of masks, or I could make masks, or I want to help in some way, who ought they be looking to contact in the medical system?
So I heard from one of the hospital systems. I heard from Rochester Regional. They have an email address. It's rrhfoundations@rochesterregional.org. The University of Rochester Medical Center, I've not heard yet. I know that they are accepting donations, but I'm not sure what the best route is for people to contact them and say that they have something that they want to give. I think it's important to try to not tie them up any more than we need to while they're dealing with the pandemic. But for Rochester Regional, the email to let them know that you have something you want to donate is rrhfoundations@rochesterregional.org.
Brett, have you ever worn an N95?
I haven't.
I haven't either. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, it's a bit of a process to get fitted for it, which is part of why public health authorities initially had been saying that it's not worth it for the public to be trying to get N95 masks. There's a whole fitting process that you go through. You typically have sweet smells sprayed into a chamber or into near you while you're wearing the mask, and then you report that you can either smell them or you can't. And if you can smell them, then you've got to adjust the fit of the mask. And so there's a whole
That
process
is so
for
interesting.
ensuring,
Yeah.
yeah, there's a whole process for ensuring that the N95 mask fits really well. And by the way, the sweet smell that they spray is one of the most concentrated sweet smells available to humanity. And so the aim is to not be able to smell this really pungent odor. And if you can't smell it, that means that the mask is sealed well enough to protect from at least a few, I mean, probably more than a few, enough to substantially protect against viral transmission through the air.
And the reason I asked that, by the way, is because for the last, well, I guess a couple of months now, there's been this idea that, if you're trained in using an N95, you're probably working in the medical system. And if you've got N95s, you probably should give them the medical system because they need them. So I think it's safe to say, first of all, that we want all nurses and doctors who need N95s to have them. Is it also safe to say that if we somehow had an endless supply of trillions of these masks in every corner and the supply was not an issue, that we would all be trying to teach ourselves or get trained to use them? I mean, is it prudent to do that if the supply is not an issue?
If supply is unlimited, right, then I mean, people wearing masks decreases transmission of pathogens. That's how masks work. That's why people in healthcare settings use them. And so, in a pandemic, from a public health perspective, it might make sense to encourage mask wearing in the general public. But also, in a pandemic, there's an increased strain, typically a huge strain, like we're seeing right now, placed on the supply of those masks and the demand for them in the healthcare setting. And so there's a good chance, and what the calculation that healthcare authorities made, the public health authorities made in this case, was that it makes more sense to save that finite supply of masks for people who are working in hospitals and are going to be in close contact with patients, and crucially, are going to be doing the procedures that aerosolize the virus, that turn it into these tiny little droplets that are easy to breathe in if you're not protected by a mask like an N95.
All right, a couple more quick ones and I'll let you go, Brett. I know it's a busy day for
Sure.
you as always. I also want to raise an important point that I heard from a number of doctors this morning. A friend of mine in Toronto, Dr. Mario Elia, weighed in on masks, and he basically said, what we need is a lot more study on not just N95s, but all kinds of masks, homemade masks, those papery masks, everything, just to see what job it does. Because the assumption is it's better than nothing. It might not be that much better than nothing, but still better than nothing is better than nothing. And we've got big numbers of people who get infected. His concern, though, is if we start seeing a lot of people in public wearing masks, which in and of itself might be a logical thing, we don't want to instill people with the false sense of confidence that, well, I'm wearing a mask, therefore I can go anywhere. I don't have to worry about physical distancing, because then we'd be losing the most important effect, which is the physical distancing. Fair?
Right. Nobody that I've heard talking locally has said anything other than continued social distancing
Yep.
is the best way to mitigate transmission. So even if people were wearing masks at an increased rate because we had masks available for people to wear, it seems to me that the advice would still be continued social distancing, even with increased mask wearing.
All right. And lastly, on the subject of what we're learning from the county, this week, starting this week, they're doing instead of 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. updates on the number of people infected with COVID, recovered from COVID, and deaths from COVID. It's a 4 p.m. only, so we don't have a morning number now. But you have done some really valuable reporting, helping us understand what numbers are currently telling us, and maybe not to get ahead of ourselves as we look at different curves. I mean, we all want to bend the curve, and we want to see the number of recovered people go up. We want to see the number of currently infected people go down. But if you've got 24 or 48 hours of the good trend, I think your reporting has indicated to us that's good. Let's be patient and not assume that, you know, we've conquered this thing.
Right. So what I started doing was subtracting the number of cases that the county reports as resolved. So those are people who have had COVID, who are known to have had COVID-19 and gotten better. I'm subtracting that number from the total number of reported cases. So you get total minus resolved, and you get something that I was calling active cases. Those are the ones that are known to still be active and have not gotten better yet. And what I saw was over the last 36, 48 hours, that number was holding pretty steady. And in some cases, in some of the between the county's 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. updates, that number had actually dipped a little bit. And so I started wondering, you know, have we peaked? Has social distancing been working? Have we taken the measures necessary to slow the spread of the virus to such an extent that, in fact, the number of infections is holding steady and is not continuing to grow? And the answer uniformly from the people, the epidemiologists that I took that data to, was we really cannot say that yet. And the models are still showing that this is more likely a blip in the data. It's some statistical noise. It's way more likely to be that than to be a sort of consistent trend downward. They said that the numbers that they're seeing are predicted still to accelerate. Now, again, all of this is a prediction. These are projections. And so a small change in the initial conditions can result in a big change in the final result. But again, to a person, what they said was that except for something like the mutation of the virus, the biggest thing that controls when the peak happens and what it looks like is social distancing and the extent to which we do it early and aggressively.
All right, Brett, thank you as always. We appreciate the great reporting, and we'll look for more work from you today on our multiple platforms, WXXINews.org and right here on Public Radio. Thank you, Brett.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Brett Dahlberg, WXXI reporter, bringing us great information every day. So let me do this. I'm going to try my best to answer. We had a phone call from a listener, and I'm not a public health expert. I'm a journalist and a talk show host. Marie in Fairport was asking, is it safe for someone to get a cup of coffee at McDonald's if they are immunocompromised? Marie, I'm going to tell you what the best information I have that comes very carefully understanding public health sources. If you can avoid going to McDonald's, even a drive-through, because I don't think you can go in now. If you can avoid that, avoid that. If you can make all your coffee at home, make all your coffee at home. If you can avoid touching containers that other people in the public have touched, avoid that. There is no such thing as risk elimination. It is all about risk reduction. Every one of us should be in the business of risk reduction as far as we can take it, within reason. We still have to get food. We have to get basic necessities to live. If a McDonald's coffee is a necessity for you to live, you will have to make that decision. I'm not saying that you're going to get sick, but I'm saying that if you can avoid it and make coffee at home, try to do that. And good luck to you. And especially for people who are immunocompromised. Be healthy, be safe. We just heard from Brett Dahlberg. You heard from Governor Andrew Cuomo earlier this hour talking about New York's response and trying to get equipment on its own, largely without leadership from the federal government, which the governor has essentially said is a disaster. FEMA pitting states against one another, competing for equipment, and some states getting equipment before they've got a crisis, while New York waits for thousands of ventilators and eventually ordered from China and is not getting what it needs. Really, really rough stuff. Chris Cuomo, his brother, the anchor from CNN, confirmed positive with coronavirus today. Chris said he had fever and chills, got tested because he also knew someone who was positive. He finds out he's positive. He's going to work from his basement, says he feels good enough to work. Andrew says his brother will be fine, but a reminder that the virus does not discriminate. Hope you're staying safe. We got more connections coming up in our next hour. And if you were joining us this hour to hear a conversation about Instacart workers, takeout restaurants, what's safe, what's moral, We will have that conversation. I think that's a very important question. And I'm very curious. I'd love to hear from you if you want to kick an email our way at connections@wxxi.org. Are you ordering takeout dinner? Takeout food? Takeout coffee anywhere? What decisions are you making? What do you think is moral and right? How are you trying to support businesses but stay safe? We'd love to hear from you, and we're going to have that conversation coming up very soon on this program. Coming up next, astrophysicist Adam Frank joins us, one of our favorite guests right here on Connections.